Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time of the day it is you are joining us. This is the Tulsa World Scene podcast, where my colleague and I, Jimmy Trammell, discuss all things highbrow, lowbrow, middle brow, and any kind of brow that you want to deal with. The big thing, which I believe ran Thursday morning on the front page, is that you, Jimmy, finally got to, if not talk to, at least listen to, Leonardo DiCaprio. I'm sure all the girls want to know, is he as dreamy as they think he is, or is that an assessment outside your purview?
Well, as someone who looks like an unmade bed, it's hard for me to judge any other human being. And props to Benny Hill for that line. I keep stealing it over and over, a thousand times. It's great that the strike occurred, the acting strike occurred, because they got better terms for what they wanted. But the tragedy, the casualty in the strike, is none of the actors could do promotion for the films they were doing, whether it's Flower Moon or Reservation Dogs. That's why you saw no interviews with any actors during the final season of Reservation Dogs, is the terms of the strike basically forbade them from doing any promotion of their projects. So props to the Apple Films people for, after the fact, after release of Killers of the Flower Moon, they did gather Leonardo DiCaprio, Lily Gladstone, Robert De Niro, Jesse Plemons, and Scorsese for a virtual media press conference yesterday to promote the film. And it wasn't a case where, thank goodness they had to see me. I was seeing them, and everyone who participated submitted questions in advance. And kind of like, the duck game at the Tulsa State Fair, where you pick up a duck and hope it's the one that wins. You hope they pick your questions and answer your questions. And fortunately, they did answer. They did pick one of my questions. So victory for us,
Bully for our side. Which question was it that they chose?
It was a question that has to do with our Sunday entertainment package, and that how important was it? I asked Lily Gladstone, how important was it? Talk about the importance of the film crew working hand in hand with the Osage for the sake of authenticity, and how important it was just to get it right. Because, forever in Hollywood, there was no consulting of tribes. It's a shame, but they only portrayed Native Americans as basically the enemy in the Cowboys and Indians movie. There was no trying to get it right as far as the tribes or their culture. So, really everyone almost unanimously gives credit to Scorsese and that team for really getting in with the Osage people and not making this something else, something generic. They really brought their culture to the film.
I was speaking with a friend of mine who is a curator, museum curator. She's now a consultant, but she specializes in indigenous art. And she talked about seeing the film, and she said there were all sorts of tiny little details that she saw almost in the background that she said just really made her happy, because they got these little tiny details correct, because she has worked with the Osage Nation for many years, and so she knew a lot of the people involved. And that's a good thing. So, and you mentioned our Sunday package. We have there's got to be a series of stories about Native art and how it is being used, portrayed, sold, however, in part because this movie has generated a whole lot of interest in Indian or Native American culture. And there are a number of little shops, and there'll be a story about it in the Sunday Tulsa World, owned and operated by tribal members selling indigenous made goods. And then, you know, but there's so much controversy around this, and it's been something that people have been dealing with for decades. There was the Native American Graves and Repatriation Act. I'm leaving out a word in the acronym. That was passed in 1990, where four specific categories of items that if museums had them, they needed to return to the tribes. Hmm. And while those are, you know, it's like human remains that for some reason or another that, you know, may not even be known how they ended up in a museum, are sure. In a museum, sacred objects, that kind of a thing. But it gets kind of a little a gray area when you're talking about works of art. You know, should white run museums have Native American art? Should it be shown only in the context of a Native museum? You know, so there's a lot of I guess gray areas around this. I know you've got a something as a part of that package for Sunday that I think is about your talk with Lily Gladstone about that.
Yeah, mine is more so entertainment as it applies to film, and just on the topic you're talking about. And I spoke with Lily Gladstone, answered my question, and I spoke also with Sydney Freeland, the director and producer of Echo, a Native Marvel series that's coming up in January, just to get some voices in this story. But it's an interesting topic, and the the press conference yesterday was the first time I'd had any interaction, albeit virtual, with any of those actors. And it was just interesting to see them, how they were as interview subjects. You know, you and I as interviewers, we're kind of rating people on a 1 to 5 scale. Like, well, that person's a great interview. That person would not be a great interview, so on and so forth. So in my head, I was doing that.
Okay. All right. Well, I won't ask you how you rated everybody. We don't want to get no fight started here.
Well, one gave very short answers, and I think because he had done more than anybody else, so you can just guess who that might be. But he was certainly polite about it.
Okay. Do you think that I know that, or I saw somewhere that Killers of the Flower Moon, while not unsuccessful, is not a box office, you know, bonanza thing. Do you think that the not having people like, you know, Robert De Niro and Lily Gladstone able to be out in front of the public, you know, and passionately talk about this film, has that, do you think that may have hurt its success, or do you think that the movie would have found its audience, whatever that audience is?
That's a great question. I mean, I do think people are going to see this movie, just that when it costs $200 million to make, that's a lot of money to make back. I'm fascinated by your question, because sometimes I'll watch old reruns of Johnny Carson, Tonight Show, on one of the retro channels. And it was standard for actors to go on that show. And by the way, Johnny would say, well, let's set up your clip. Here's the movie you've got coming out this week. Did that make you want to go see that movie? Because it's still standard today for these actors to go do the talk shows and say, here's a clip.
Oh, yeah.
Does it make you want to go see that movie?
sometimes, and other times it makes me go, okay, I've seen enough of that movie. I don't need to see anymore.
Sure.
But, you know, so, but it's all a gray area now and academic, but.
Hey, I'll take this from movies to movies.
Okay.
Give me a movie sequel that's better than the original. I know it's hard to do to top the first. Give me, could be more than one. Give me a sequel that you feel is better.
I can think of two offhand. One is kind of a nuanced kind of thing, but Godfather Part Two.
Okay.
If it is not better than Godfather, the original Godfather, it is definitely. There was no lessening of its artistry. And I just thought of one that would be kind of a left field thing. It would hard to say call it a sequel because it was shot as one movie and then just cut in half. And that would be The Four Musketeers. After the Three Musketeers from the 1970s. But probably the one that was definitely, and again, not that the first one was bad, mm-hmm. but it was just a very different, and I would probably Aliens, the follow-up to Alien.
We're going to get there. When you said Three Musketeers and it was all cut into two movies, I thought you were going to say Superman and Superman 2.
Okay.
Because same director did the same thing, did all the filming for both movies, cut it into two movies. And it's funny, the Three Musketeers led to legislation. The actors in Three Musketeers did not that it was going to be cut into two movies.
That's so right.
They made a rule like you have to tell and pay the actors for two movies if you shoot two movies and try to pretend it's one. I'll go decades earlier. Bride of Frankenstein is better than Frankenstein, which was kind of a snooze. But you said Aliens, and that's the whole reason I brought this up. Alien in 1979 was a sci-fi movie, but really it was a horror movie. I mean, it scared the crap out of people.
It was an old dark house movie set in space.
And set their sequel doesn't come around until 7 years later, Aliens, and it's an action movie. It's not a horror movie, and I agree. It's as good or as better than the original. One of the co-workers went to school with Newt, the little girl in the movie. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Andrea went to school with him.
Well, I also would say that. While yes, it is an action movie, but it is also a domestic drama because it's really the story of two single mothers trying to deal with all sorts of complications, you know.
Pretty much. maternal instinct in space is what it was all about.
There you go.
But
well, you bring that up because...
If you dig Aliens, five actors from that film will be in Tulsa this weekend for a Retromania Collectibles show at the fairgrounds Saturday and Sunday. The humans who kind of fight the aliens are called Colonial Marines. So five of these Colonial Marines will be at this Pop Culture Con Saturday and Sunday at the Exchange Center at the fairgrounds. And we'll have a story interviewing three of those Colonial Marines on Friday.
Can you say who they are? Who will be coming?
Rico Ross, Mark Rolston, Daniel Cash, two of the female Colonial Marines. I didn't get a chance to talk to those two.
Okay.
But, these are probably more under the radar names, to be honest. But if you look at their filmographies, they've done 1,000 things. I mean, they've been... Sure. Like, I'll have a Sunday story on Mark Rolston also, who's been in every franchise you can possibly think of. I mean, one of those guys who's just done everything. And even recently with the Star Wars franchise and Ahsoka. So
okay.
Anyhow, cool event this weekend. Come out and see the Aliens actors.
Okay. Well, speaking of movies yet again, this is a movie that's coming to the stage. We'll have an interview with one of the cast members of the stage musical version of Beetlejuice, which will be playing Thanksgiving weekend or Thanksgiving week here in at the Tulsa PAC. We talked to Megan McGinnis, who plays the role of Barbara, who is one of a couple that die in the opening minutes and become ghosts and are trying to, you know, scare people out of their old house. And they manage to evoke a demon named Beetlejuice. And as they say, hilarity ensues. But we'll talk to her about that. We'll ask her about if she believes in ghosts, which she has an interesting answer to that. So we'll have that coming up. And we also did ask her, this is the show that got a certain U.S. representative into trouble with her constituency, among other things. And we did ask about that, and she has an answer to that too. So as far as eating places, we reviewed the new location of Mandarin Taste, which was one of the first truly authentic Chinese restaurants that open in Tulsa. I remember they had a several page menu, and one page was, you know, they would have the English translation with, you know, the Chinese characters for all these dishes. But then there was a special menu in the back that was nothing, everything was in Chinese. And it was things that the owner said, you know, I don't know if Americans are quite ready for some of the ingredients in the dishes, but they're very popular in China. And so, but they've moved now to 91st and Sheridan. So we'll have a review of that. Let's see. I think that wraps it up for this week. Want to thank you all for putting up with us for as long as you have, and that we will wish you a good night and a pleasant tomorrow.
Behave.